Blog Talk Radio.
Imagine being a spiritually involved person with a soul selfishness. How is that possible? Stay tuned. Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, healing through love, relationship healer, somatic body psychotherapist, and health and wellness coach, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me book series and the beautiful novel Love in the Blizzard of Life and a love-changing course, Love Lessons for Your Soul. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who just keep proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and beyond. Jane Wyker, author of Soul Selfish, The Awakening of a Good Girl, was a pioneer in parent education. She was a family counselor and Fortune 500 companies presenter. She raised four children while pursuing her own spiritual growth. And I look forward to speaking with you today, Jane Wyker, so you can share with us what is the benefit of being soul selfish. So welcome.
Thank you. So nice to be here, Erica.
Yes, I would love to hear about your background. I was one of these good girls, too. And I'd love to hear what your progression was that led from being this good girl, following what everybody tells you to do and pleasing them, to this discovery and calling it soul selfish. So tell us about that path.
Well, my early childhood was spent living in quite a chaotic household with my mom, who was a very kind woman, but emotionally ill, so much so that she required electroshock therapy. We lived in this house with her mother, who was a very mean and dominating woman, and my Aunt Rose, my mother's sister, who was childless and who I saw as my surrogate mom. I also had a brother who was 4 years older and my dad, a lawyer who tried to hold it all together. And my dad was very attentive to my mom and did his best to care for both my brother and me. But my brother was a very, what I call, bad boy, a role that he took on to get attention. And the role that I took on to get attention was good girl, which was giving and giving and giving and asking for little and not wanting to add more onto my mom's trouble. But I'll speak more about roles later on. When I was 10, my Aunt Rose died, and I was devastated, feeling that I had lost my most favorite person in the world. And in the 40s, when I went to elementary school, children who did well in school were skipped, and I skipped twice and graduated from high school at age 16. And my dad had a great deal of difficulty with my adolescence, which was a very turbulent time for me. My changing body and his unstated fear of pregnancy with me made him become extremely verbally and emotionally abusive. and unapproachable. He was never physically abusive, but with the loss of my Aunt Rose and my mom's depression, I lost my dad too, my only parental connection. So at that time, okay, I then went off to college. I went to Cornell, and the norms at that time, what it meant to be a successful woman, was to marry a successful man. And with rare exceptions, the only occupations available to women were nursing, teaching, librarian, low-level executive, and sales. And I became a teacher and taught first grade and married a classmate of mine a year later after we graduated together. But to give you an idea of what it was like at that time, of what the culture was like, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was at Cornell also. She was 2 years ahead of me. And then she went off to Harvard Law School. And at that time in her class, 9 women out of 500 students were with a class structure. And today the majority of U.S. law students are female. So that's how far we've come from the time that we were in college to now. So I went on to have 4 children, 3 sons and a daughter, all before my 30th birthday. And I loved being a mom. My children just filled my life with laughter and purpose. And I just loved being with them. But I felt lonely in my marriage, although I appreciated the wealthy lifestyle that my husband provided. I later learned that I continued the same childhood good girl role in my marriage. And to show you how that worked, I'll give you an incident that happened. My husband at that time, he was on Wall Street, and he was given tickets, season tickets, to the New York Giants football games. And I was not a big football fan, but he wanted me to go, and I thought, you know, it would be really good for us to have time together and alone, and let me try it and see if I like it. And we got to the old Yankee Stadium. At that time, they had supporting pillars, unlike the stadiums today. And when I sat down, I saw that there was a supporting pillar that was just obstructing my view of the field. So I looked a little to the left of the pole and saw that I could see some, and I looked to the right of the pole and saw that I could see some, and thought, well, okay, it'll be okay. And then I just leaned over to my left to see how his seat was, and his seat was better than mine. It wasn't perfect, but it was better than mine. And I decided that I wouldn't say anything about my seat, because after all, these games were more important to him than they were to me. So I sat in this seat for 10 years. Never asking to change seats at halftime or game to game. He never asked to change seats. And there I was, good girl, sitting behind the pole.
It's a vivid image. But just to verify that era, I also grew up in that era where women were teachers, secretaries, or nurses. And in my family, you didn't become a salesperson or a nurse or an administrative assistant. The only choice was really to be a teacher.
Mm-hmm. And I really loved being a teacher. I taught first grade for a year before getting married. And I just loved it. It was rewarding. It was fun. It was something I looked forward to doing every day. So by the time I was in, go ahead.
Yeah, because not everyone loved it. I did not love teaching. I wasn't brought up to handle the discipline. And then I had a class where kids were like hanging out of the closets. I mean, it was an open school, so we've had different experiences. But continue.
Yeah. Well, mine were really sweet 6-year-olds who were excited to learn how to read. So I think I had an easier time than you. Oh, well. Well, by the time I was in my mid-30s, my husband had done so well in his work. And he was able to take the summer off, and he suggested that we rent a villa for the whole summer in Italy. And I had never been to Europe, and here he was offering this to our whole family. And yes, of course. So off we went to Italy for the whole summer. And it was just beautiful, with the beauty and interest that Italy presented, with the food, the scenery, the people, the music. I just loved it. But I often found myself sad in my quiet times, in my alone times. And I wondered, how could this be when living such a dream? Like, what was wrong with me? So I decided that it was time to look within when I returned to the U.S., and that was really the beginning of my inner life journey in 1970.
And what did you discover at that point, or how did you begin?
I went to, at that time, group therapy was very, very popular, and I went to a group therapy session. And it was, I'll never forget it. I walked into this room and it was totally bare. There's nothing on the walls. And there was about seven or eight chairs and a group leader. And the group started, and the group leader asked the woman next to me, she was sitting right next to me, why she was so sad. And the woman started to cry, and she cried and she cried. And she was talking about her dad. And she was in this very deep place of pain and sobbing, and I felt myself starting to cry. And anyway, this woman went through this process until she was complete, and there was just no more there. And I looked at her, and she looked lighter, and she began to smile, and even within a few minutes began to laugh. And I wondered how this was possible, that she could be in this extreme different emotional state just a few minutes later. And so she settled down, and we all supported her and surrounded her with love and tenderness. And when we all settled down, the group leader said, "So Jane, why are you crying?" And I said, "Well, I felt so much connected to this woman." And she said, "Well, tell us about your dad." And before I knew it, I was in the same state that she had been in and had the same experience that she had. And then I decided, you know, this is the most important thing I can ever do. And it was the beginning of my inner journey, which has never ended since. And this was in 1970.
Yeah. Well, it goes today for everyone. We really have to do our own inner work. So many people are focused outward, blaming other people and also pleasing other people. So my next question is, what does it mean to be a people pleaser nowadays, and how often do you see that around you?
Well, I see it less than I used to see it because there's so much more about women empowerment than there was. But I still see it in marriages, so much in marriages and in relationship. I see women taking on their work with more power than I've ever seen them do, and more joy and more authority. But in their relationships with men, I still see a kind of a reticence to take stands that are really important to be taking. And I think that we've lived in a patriarchy for, you know, thousands of years, and that little by little we're growing out of that. But it's still difficult for women to assert themselves, although I see so much more growth in younger women who are self-sufficient, you know, and not dependent economically, and have had more education and more time on their own than I would have had at their time in life.
So how did you evolve into becoming what you call soul selfish? And explain what that is and why that matters.
Well, soul selfish, the common word for selfish brings to mind going for what you want without considering the effects on other people, concerned only with your own pleasure or your own benefit or profit. And that's what I call ego selfish. But soul selfish is the opposite, because at a soul level, we're all connected. And what we want for ourselves is good for us, and at the same time, it's good for others. And I believe that the soul is the seed plan that we're born with. It's our spiritual DNA. It contains our personalities, our abilities, our talents. It's our authentic self. And when we live from our souls, we're strong in our authenticity. And that allows us to be free to be real and free to be happy, free to love and to be loved. And that we know what we want because we're connected to the deepest place in ourselves and have far more to offer, our love, our fun, and our service. So that soul connection takes time to really connect with and really build, because there is so much conditioning that we go through in our childhoods and in our school years with our teachers and our peers, and that we need to little by little go back in and deeper inside of ourselves to connect with that authentic place that we are. And it is my contention that happiness, sustained happiness, absolutely is dependent upon that level of authenticity, where we know what we want and we know what's true for us and we know what feels good to us and we know how to pursue our lives in service of that and others.
So maybe just briefly explain the difference between really being authentic. I mean, people think they're being authentic. They might yell at their partner and they say what they want to say and they express themselves. What's the difference between being authentic and not really being authentic?
Well, to be authentic, you have to know who you are and what really matters to you. And you need to know what your terms are and what you're willing to do and where your borders and boundaries are that you will not cross. So it takes a lot of strength to be able to say no, or I won't, or stop, if you're not very sure of what those boundaries are and those limits are and what your desires are. And the more authentic you become, the more you really understand what you want and you understand what you're willing to do or not do. And you're willing to take risks, even if it's harder, because you know that if you don't take those risks, that you're going to be belying your authenticity. And it is your very authenticity that is the source of your happiness.
That's kind of hard for people to grasp, because you look in the media and you see these successful people, you know, and all the images that they have, you know. So if you're being authentic and you're getting rejected by dates or not real successful financially, it can be very confusing.
Well, I'm not saying it's easy to be authentic, but I'm saying that it's essential to be authentic if you want to be happy. And that to meet the challenges within yourself to stand for that, first of all, to find it. It takes some work to find your authenticity by becoming attuned to yourself, by knowing that when you're doing something or saying something or allowing something in your life that you really don't feel good about. As you become more attuned to that, and then you learn how to say no to those things, where before becoming attuned to that, you would just do that. And you also learn how it feels to belie that. And that feels really, really uncomfortable and unpleasant and painful. So little by little, none of this happens in a day or a week. It's really a lifetime process that we grow more and more and more into our authenticity if that is one of our goals. But I say, and the purpose of Soul Selfish and writing Soul Selfish was that I have transformed a life that had so many difficulties and challenges you know, from the time I was very little until I was about 40 years old, and then different ones, but then they became creative ones. And I've transformed my life by little peeling off the layers of inauthenticity and peeling off the layers of doing it other people's way or dependency, which creates so much of the source of these behaviors. And it takes a lot to become independent. And that doesn't mean isolated or alone. It means self-sufficient. And once you know that you can take care of yourself on all levels, on your physical level, on your emotional level, on your spiritual level, that you know that you will meet challenges, but that you have the strength or the willingness or ability to reach out to others to support you. And people who will support you.
Now, that's a very important point, that it becomes almost impossible to really be authentic if you're surrounded by people who are controlling and who aren't looking at themselves and blaming you and victim mentality.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true when we're children and we're dependent. And, you know, we can't move out of our households when we're 6 years old. But as we grow more into our own selves and into our own wholeness and independence, then we get to choose the relationships that we want to engage with, and we choose how deeply we want to deal with whoever comes into our life, because we have an antenna that's more refined, not only to other people, but more especially to ourselves. And we have a sense of, I trust this person, or I don't trust that person. And so we begin to use that radar system that we have within ourselves of what's true for us as we go present ourselves into the world.
And now, how does spirituality come into this? And how does that open us to find more peace and joy and creative expression?
Well, for me, it was just a huge breakthrough as I began to meditate. And this was before I left my marriage, and I began to meditate, and I had a wonderful meditation teacher, and it was just a very simple process of just either saying a poem or a statement or something that was calming, and just sit there and just listen. And after several months, I began to get messages, and sometimes I would just sit quietly, or sometimes I would just go for a walk. And one day I heard, it's time for you to write a book. And I was just so absolutely blown away, because I just never saw myself as a writer. And I resisted that for some time, but I kept hearing that. And then I even heard the word soul selfish. And that intrigued me. So finally, when I was 78 years old, I sat down at my computer and I started to write, and I didn't stop until the book was done. And it was one of the most joyous experiences. And I believe that we are connected to a universe that is benevolent and loving. And the more that I can just quiet myself and breathe that in and be receptive and listen, the more guidance that I receive and the more happiness I've been able to create. So I have a very deep honoring of my spiritual practice every day, where whether it's, as I say, a walk or just moving to music on my own, but always alone at these times, or sitting or posing a question. And sometimes I'll just sit and write with my pad, and I'll just write to my guides. I call them my guides, you know, what's on my mind. And then I just listen, and I just write what I hear, and the most beautiful passages come through. And so it's had a huge amount of support and guidance and creativity for me in my life. And I just think it's so important for people to calm down, quiet down. And at the beginning, it's not easy. because all you hear at the beginning is the noise in your mind. But little by little, if you stick with it, the noise lessens, and then the quiet begins, and then the guidance begins. And it just takes some presence and some willingness and some patience.
Yeah, well, I know several, mostly younger people, but older people too, who can't sit still. They could mm-hmm. not find the time to meditate, and they have to be doing something and working out and planning activities and meeting with friends and eating out and drinking, you know, like this treadmill of activity. So what you're mm-hmm. saying is, which so many people talk about nowadays, getting quiet.
Well, but I say that just people who talk to me, as you're saying now, I suggest to them that they go for a walk, that they don't have to mm-hmm. sit still, or that they dance. They don't have to sit still, but that they're out of their head. They're not thinking. You know, they're not doing a project. They're in their body more, and they're just striding along, or they're dancing to music that it pleases them, and that will cut down the chatter of the mind. And after you do that for a sufficient amount of time for your particular self, you will begin to find moments of quiet, and those moments will expand through practice. And so it's not necessary to sit with your legs crossed, you know, and your palms connected to meditate. There are many ways to meditate. Meditation to me is just simply quieting the mind so that you can hear a different level of mind.
And as you're talking, I'm thinking of music, like playing music, playing an instrument
yes.
or singing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there are many cultures that do chanting, you know, and that's why it quiets the mind.
Yes, and when the mind is quiet, the body relaxes. And then when the body relaxes, a different level of instruction is possible. And that's not going to happen in a week or a month, but you will feel better instantly. I mean, you will begin to feel better, whether you begin to get guidance or messages, that takes time. But you will feel instantly better if you begin a practice of whether it's walking in nature or dancing, even in your living room, just dancing to music that you enjoy and feeling the flow of your own body. You're giving your mind a rest. And that's so mm-hmm. important, especially today when people are just so busy, and, you know, so involved with technology and so involved with work for so many hours every week and every day. It's very, very important part of happiness. And Soul Selfish, really, I wrote Soul Selfish because I feel so grateful for the happiness that I have created in my life. And I know that the happiness that I've created in my life has come through the undoing of so much in my mind and in my heart and in my belly, and all of this energy of letting it go little by little by little and replacing it with pleasure and projects that I am excited about and people that I'm excited about and places that I'm excited about. And the more that you release that which is clogging you, then you can recreate in yourself that which is pleasuring you.
This is so important for people to hear, because I'm really impressed that you shared your age, that you wrote this book, which means that you're even older now, and yet you're happy and excited and you know, feeling the pleasure and connecting with people and new projects. And that's what it takes to really live a happy life. So I would like you to talk about aging gracefully. What does that mean? And you're doing it. So share some of your secrets.
Well, before I do that, I just want to say one thing more that has been a huge part of my happiness, and that is when I was 50 years old, we came back into connection with an old male friend of mine, that I was friendly with him and his wife. In fact, so much so that they asked if I would be the guardian to their children in the event of a common accident. And when when his wife died and my friend died, of course I went to the funeral and I went to the house to just say hi to the kids and to Bob. And long story short, Bob and I have been married now for 33 years that have been so glorious and so beautiful and so loving and so growthful. And I attribute so much of that to all of the emotion that I let go of, all of the patterns that I let go of from my earlier years. And the 10 years that I was on my own gave me the opportunity to come into myself and then move out into the world, not only in work, but in relationship as a much more whole woman. And I feel so grateful to have created with Bob this just beautiful life together.
That's
so
beautiful.
It's just not only about work, it's about life, that your life will change as you let go of those roles. And there are several of them. I was a good girl. My brother was a bad boy. But there's those of us who think we're brains because we do very well in school, or artsy. You know, we're very talented with art, or drama queens, or jocks on the athletic field. And we may have these talents and abilities, but they're not who we are. They're things that we're good at or things that we do, but they're not the essence of who we are. And until we can see ourselves as deeper than that, and release that which stands in the way of feeling the beauty of who we are and the value of who we are and the talents of who we are, then we can go out into the world and express them and create happiness for ourselves and others and create relationships from a whole other level of dependency or need or feeling less than or better than our partner.
What I'm hearing is love, that you've developed a strong capacity to give and receive love because you're giving from a place of wholeness.
Yes, beautifully said, Erica. And that giving and receiving that love comes from the ability to clear out that which blocks that love from within ourselves and from others. And
that's
all of the
amazing
memories and feelings attributed to those experiences in our life that we're not loving.
Well, not everybody, especially as they age, can break up with the person they're with and find a new partner. It can get really difficult. So what tips would you have for someone that wants to love their life and feel that passion, and maybe they don't have a partner?
Mm-hmm. Well, I truly believe that we can have a very full and happy life solo, but that it's going to, in order to create a sustained happiness, we have to become truly authentic. And what blocks us from our authentic selves and sustained happiness are basically two factors. One is the early childhood roles that we've taken on unconsciously and still held. Okay, like I married, my first marriage, I was the same good girl that I was with my mother because I was unconscious of it. So early childhood roles taken on consciously and still held need to be let go of. And the other is fear of our unmet emotion, that people are afraid of their pain, so they keep stuffing it down and stuffing it down and stuffing it down. And the analogy that I can give to you is if I'm looking at the window today and it's a gorgeous day and I see the sun and the sky and it's beautiful. But yesterday it was very cloudy and all I could see were the clouds, not even realizing that there was a sun behind those clouds, except that it was light out, mm-hmm. So I knew it was there, but I couldn't experience it. Well, that's how it is inside of ourselves, that we have this soul that is shining and glorious, and we have these emotions from childhood on that cover as clouds that soul. And as we begin to be willing to disperse those clouds by letting go of those emotions and seeing what they're about. We create little cracks in that cloud cover, so we begin to feel the radiant sun shining through. And the more that we do that, the more the sun shines through until life becomes really a blessing. But it requires that work of undoing that which is hiding you from your soul. But your soul is always waiting for you.
That's absolutely beautiful. So, Jane, please share with us how people can get your book and contact you or anything else that you're offering.
Okay, well, the book's name is Soul Selfish, The Awakening of a Good Girl. It is a memoir that can be purchased on Amazon in either hardcover or Kindle formats. And I wrote it in story form because I believe that people enjoy and receive content more easily through stories than from principles. I have a website, janewyker.com. That's JaneWyker.com, which offers two free confidential quizzes. One is a 25-question quiz that will show you where you stand on the soul selfish happiness scale with suggested next steps. And then there's a 10-question men's relationship quiz that will show men where they stand as partners. And I repeat, these are entirely free and confidentially. And please join me on Jane Wyker Author Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram for inspirational quotes, articles, and content from my events.
Well, thank you so much for sharing with my listeners today. So I look forward to speaking to you again. It was delightful.
Thank you, Erica. I have so enjoyed our time together.
And to those of you listening, this is Dr. Erica Goodstone saying goodbye for now. Please visit my website, drericagoodstone.com, if you're really looking to heal through love. Check out what's available there, lots of stuff. And I look forward to speaking to you again soon. Bye for now.